League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You are now listening to the Calcio Corner Podcast with your host, Raffaele.
What's good? This is indeed the Calcio Corner Podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 53rd episode of the podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, just about anywhere you can get your podcasts. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter. My account is at Italiano Calcio. Check the link in my Twitter bio for all the links that you need to support and listen to my podcast. So a little bit later on this episode, I will have Derek Ray. He does an outstanding job, play-by-play announcer for international football in the Bundesliga. Primarily, he will come on to help preview the Euro final between Italy and England. But that's where we are going to start off this 53rd episode of the podcast, by sharing my thoughts about the final. So it's all set Sunday, Wembley Stadium. It will be Italy versus England. Winner will be able to claim the title as Euro 2020 champion. Italy definitely deserving of their spot in the final. They have been as consistent and as good a team as any of these other countries have been throughout this tournament. England, they had their struggles against their game against Scotland, where they drew against them, a game that a lot of people were tabbing them to win. But overall, you got to give England some credit. They definitely deserve to be in the final and have been a pretty consistent team. But overall, they are not a team that instill a tremendous amount of fear in me as an Italian fan. I've been banging the Italian drum for a while now since the tournament started. And then after, the first two group stage games, I was really, my level of confidence rose even more. And I mentioned it on Twitter at that time. I said, I will take this Italian team against anybody. I did not fear when we played a good team like Belgium. I know they were down Eden Hazard, but still, that was still a very good Belgium side, and I was not overly scared heading into that game. We played a pretty good, solid Spanish side, and Spain played their game. Spain maintained possession. Spain created more chances. That's what they do, yet we still emerged victorious in that penalty shootout. So I'm not going to back off of my confidence and expectations for this Italian team just yet. I still think we should be favored over England. If you actually look at the betting odds, at least here in the United States, and I would assume it's the same internationally, England are the betting favorites. And I feel like that really comes down to the fact that they are playing in England. So certainly you could look at it as perhaps they have that home field advantage. That certainly is going to contribute towards it. And I also just think that, popular consensus is to get, the British to bet. And I know that's, maybe sounds a little silly, but I see it happen here in the United States. Teams like the Dallas Cowboys are a widely popular team in the NFL and American football. And I feel like they always set bets for the Cowboys preseason, maybe win-loss totals for them at such a high number because they know that there's so many Cowboy fans and they're just going to bet in favor of the Cowboys and say they're going to bet over. And that's how the house makes so much money because a lot of times the Cowboys don't hit that over. And I apologize if some of you listening have no idea what I'm talking about, but I'm just wondering if some of that's going into making England the betting favorites, besides the home field advantage, that they are such a big popular team. People will bet them, and the house knows that they could potentially make a lot of money by getting people to bet with England in hopes that actually Italy pull off the victory. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. Because again, I don't see how it could be so lopsided in the betting odds, besides the fact that it is at Wembley Stadium. But I don't even know if that necessarily is a home field advantage. Of course, they are playing at home, but at the same time, that brings such a level of pressure on them to win. If they go down in this game, how is that going to affect the crowd there? They're going to start to feel more pressure mounting on them with all the locals. They're playing on their home field, and I'm sure there will be plenty of Italians that make the trip to London. There's obviously a strong Italian presence already that lives in London. So I'm sure that there will be plenty of Italians at the stadium. The Italians have done a great job traveling throughout this tournament. I don't know if it necessarily is a home field advantage. I'm going to ask Derek Ray that a little bit later on when I interview him to get his thoughts on that. Harry Kane, of course, is the big you know, the big name striker. He had an outstanding season with Tottenham. I'm not denying what a special talented player he is. But for me, he's not the player that I would be most fearful of. If I'm the Italian defenders in the Italian team, for me, it's Raheem Sterling. I think he's had a pretty good tournament. He's so quick. He's so dangerous playing on that right side of the field and getting into the box and creating situations. That first goal that England scored when they were trailing 1-0 to Denmark, it went down as an own goal for Denmark, but that was all Raheem Sterling creating that opportunity and getting in that box and creating a dangerous situation where those Denmark defenders had a kind of panic a little bit. And his speed can kill. He's a very talented player. So for me, that is the key player that if I'm, you know, Roberto Mancini, that I'm keying in on and telling my team to focus, and we can't let Raheem Sterling beat us, because I think between Bonucci and Chiellini, we could contain Harry Kane. They've done an outstanding job. You saw how little Lukaku did in the game against Belgium. So I feel like that we could control a top flight striker like Harry Kane with our center backs. But for me, it's Raheem Sterling. He's the danger man that could create for us. If you look at the Spain game, Dani Olmo, who plays out wide, he was perhaps Spain's most dangerous player. If you look at the Belgium game, Jeremy Doku, the young teenager, lightning fast, he was the one who was creating a lot of dangerous situations for Belgium. So we're talking about players that play out wide on the wing. That's kind of been the players that have been hurting Italy in this tournament. So that's why I feel like Raheem Sterling is the guy that we need to key in on. I'm not saying, obviously, you don't focus on Harry Kane. He certainly is lethal and can kill you in a blink of an eye. But I feel like we have a track record of being able to control these big strikers. It's that wide player that's been giving Italy a little bit of trouble in this tournament. So that's why we have to zero in on Raheem Sterling. There's been a lot of talk about who Italy should start in attack. I've seen things like Belotti should start for Ciro Immobile. I've seen things that maybe we start with a false nine. Maybe we move Lorenzo Insigne inside and we play Berardi, Insigne, and Chiesa. Again, as I've said many times in this podcast, I'm sure you're sick of hearing me say this, I have nothing but confidence in Roberto Mancini. Whatever decision he makes, I'm going to support. I'm not going to second guess him. But me, I'm rolling with what's been working. I'm still starting Ciro Immobile as my striker, Insigne and Chiesa. Immobile, I know the last couple games, his production hasn't been there as it was earlier on in this tournament when he scored in those first couple group stage games. But the work rate is still there. Ciro Immobile is still working unbelievably hard. He's still running after every ball. His decision-making has been a little poor lately, going back to the Belgium game and even in the Spain game. So certainly Immobile is going to have to step up. We're going to need him to put in a good performance, but I think Mancini is going to still run with him. I don't expect Mancini to change anything from the starting lineup that we had against Spain. I think we're going to stick with, you know, Chiesa, Immobile, Insigne in attack. It'll be Verratti, Jorginho, Barella in the midfield, Emerson, Bonucci, Chiellini, and Di Lorenzo in defense. Obviously Donnarumma in goal. I don't expect any changes. I think Mancini's going to stick with, you know, what's been working, with the chemistry, the continuity that we've had with our starting 11. In that Spain game, you kind of saw early on, Emerson was trying to figure out what to do exactly, how to play within the tactics of Mancini. Spinazzola and Insigne had developed really great chemistry on that left side and really worked well together. And you could see Emerson was kind of, like I said, he was a little confused as to what to do and how to figure out things with Insigne and how to link up with him. But towards the end of that first half, you really start to see him gain confidence, and he started to play a lot better, become more of an attacking force. He and Insigne were linking up a lot better, and I expect to see that level of confidence that, you know, they kind of figured it out in that Spain game. And I expect that when we take the field against England, there won't be that kind of clunkiness early on. I think Emerson and Insigne, they have figured it out, so that'll be a positive sign. If Emerson is more confident heading into that game and he could kind of play that role of Spinazzola, because Spinazzola has been one of the most critical players for us and one of the reasons we are here in the final. Look, I don't know why, but my gut is telling me that Italy are not going to struggle in this game. For whatever reason, maybe I'm being a little delusional. Maybe this excitement of being in the final, maybe I'm too much of the fan is coming out of me. But when we were playing Belgium, I knew we were going to be in a dogfight. I knew it was going to be a tough game. I felt that we would win, obviously, but it was going to be a dogfight, and it kind of was. The Spain game, I certainly felt was going to be a dogfight. I knew that they were going to control possession. They were going to create more chances than us, but we gritted it out. We gutted it out. We fought hard. We kind of turned back the clock and played that old school Italian style, sit back, hit on the counter, bend, don't break type of style of play, and we emerged victorious. But for some reason, and I'm not trying to disrespect this English team, they have plenty of talent. As I mentioned, guys like Harry Kane, guys like Raheem Sterling, the talent is there. They have great talent off the bench. Jack Grealish, we've seen how special and how much he could change a game coming off the bench in the second half. Phil Foden's a solid player they have coming off the bench. But for whatever reason, my gut is telling me that we kind of ease into a nice 2-0 victory, maybe a 3-1 victory. That's just kind of what my gut's been telling me. Something about this game does not have me overly nervous. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's just kind of my thoughts about how this game's going to go. I look for maybe Chiesa to get a goal, maybe Immobile kind of gets back in the good graces of some of the Italian fans and the Italian media that's been critical of him. He maybe gets a goal. So that's my prediction. I'm going maybe 2-0, 3-1 victory, semi-easy cruise to it, and more of a game where we take the game to England. The Spain game, obviously, as I said, we kind of played more of our old style of football where we sit back, we defend, we bend, don't break, we try to hit on the counter, and that's what we did. But I think against a team like England, we could see more of that progressive style of football we've been playing under Mancini, where we take the game to the opponent, we have our fair amount of possession, we create plenty of chances and put pressure on the defense, and that's what I'm expecting in this final against England. Be sure to hit me up on Twitter, at ItalianoCalcio. Let me know your prediction. Who's going to win? What's the scoreline you're going with? I would love to see what your reaction is to the final leading up to it. All right, so I'm going to have Derek Ray on to preview the upcoming Euro final on Sunday between Italy and England. Derek Ray, he is one of the voices for the Bundesliga and international football, does a great job, you know, calling games with his commentary. He's done a great job calling some of these games during the Euro. This will actually be the second time Derek Ray has appeared as a guest on this podcast, so I'm really thrilled to have him back. He's such a great follow on Twitter, especially if you are a fan of the Bundesliga and German football, just a fan of the sport in general. He's such a great follow. He's such a great guy to take the time to come on for a second time, and I can't wait to get his thoughts on what he thinks is going to go down this Sunday. All right, let me welcome in my guest on the Calcio Corner podcast, Mr. Derek Ray. How are you doing today, Derek?
I'm very well, Raffaele. I'm finished with my own Euro commitment, so I'm winding down a bit and enjoying the end of the tournament.
Great to hear. One thing I just want to throw a little praise your way. Your pronunciation of these players' names is literally second to none. Like, I can't imagine how much work you got to do to prepare to pronounce all these players' names correctly, because sometimes, like, when I'm watching Italian teams play, and I cringe a little when I hear some of the pronunciations, but the effort you put in to pronounce all these players' names from all these different countries, it's amazing. Like, how much work does that take?
Well, that's very kind of you to say. It's something that really comes from my languages background. I've always been very passionate about languages. And it comes down to this. I want people from a particular country to hear it and say to themselves, oh, yeah, that guy does know what he's talking about. It is work, but it's work that I also do in conjunction with the FIFA video game that I'm part of. Right. And to me, it's just part of normal preparation. Quite strangely, there are actually some people who don't like it, and I hear from them quite loudly on social media. And I think that's just because they've been used to hearing names in many cases said the wrong way down the years. And so there's a kind of a criticism that comes my way when they hear it in a different way. You know, I sometimes get told, why don't you just say it the way everybody else says it? And, you know, to me, I'm a broadcast journalist and I strive for accuracy. And that includes pronouncing people's names. So that's where I come from on the issue.
No, I can't imagine anyone should have a problem with that. It's amazing that you do that. All right, so I wanted to get you on to talk about the Euro final and a few other things. Obviously, we have Italy versus England. I'm obviously ecstatic being an Italian fan that Italy are in the finals, as are most of my listeners, since this is a podcast that focuses on calcio. Coming into the tournament, a lot of people were calling Italy a dark horse and felt that maybe they had an ability to make a deep run, but I don't know how many people were picking them to reach the final. In your opinion, are Italy overachieving, or are they this good enough to actually be worthy of playing in the final?
I'm not sure they're overachieving based on what we've seen. I think from the word go and that opening match of the tournament, we saw that this was a different Italy. This was an Italy with multiple strings to the bow. And if you compare and contrast the Azzurri with the other squads at the Euro, I think they're there on merit. I think absolutely they are. And what has impressed me most of all is that they have shown us a different face in maybe not every game, but if you think about the first couple of matches when it was, you know, very compelling attacking football in the games against Turkey and Switzerland, the Wales game, you know, was sort of a end of group game, typical end of group game where the job had already been done, you know, then showing real grit against Austria, against a good Austrian side. on the night at Wembley and having the wherewithal to come through that test, and it was a real test. And then maybe the best game of the tournament for me, Belgium against Italy, when I thought, again, it was sort of a combination of both defending when they had to, but showing the attacking nous when needed. And against Spain, I think outplayed at times, but showing how good defensively Italy can be and sticking to a plan and knowing that they could get there in the end. And they did. And, you know, again, some people might say that Spain surprised them in that game with how well they played. Didn't really surprise me because I thought Spain would have most of the possession. But Italy made it to the final. And again, you go back to the first game, you look at how they got to the final, a very different Italy. And that, to me, speaks to a well-rounded side, a very well-coached team with few obvious weaknesses.
Yeah, I agree. It's been nice to see them play this more progressive style of football, like you said, in some of those earlier group stage games, and able to come out victorious. And then in that Spain game, kind of turn back the clock and more, play a more traditional style of Italian football where we sit back, we defend, we bend, don't break, and we still were able to emerge victorious. So it's nice to see us being able to win in a majority of different ways. All right, so tell me why Italy will win on Sunday. And is there a certain player that you look at and say that player is going to be key in helping them beat England?
If Italy are going to win, they're going to have to rely on the experience, first and foremost, of somebody like Giorgio Chiellini. And not just because I'm on this podcast with you, Raffaele, I think he's been the player of the tournament. I think if I were to go and have a look at every single player and judge them on their performances, I think my vote would probably go to Chiellini. That's not the sexy pick because people always go for attacking players. But right. I think at 36, he's been nothing short of remarkable during this Euro. And so I think to me, it starts with Chiellini. And, you know, it's not just the defending. We saw what he did ahead of that penalty shootout with Jordi Alba by behaving in a friendly human way. Right. He actually won that battle before it even really took place, in hindsight, you know. And I think it took Jordi Alba by surprise. But there is a very experienced pro. There is somebody who has been over this course multiple times before, and you could not ask for a better leader than Giorgio Chiellini. And of course, when you have Bonucci there as well, that greatly helps. So you have that anchor, and you have a good goalkeeper, a much younger player, of course, in Donnarumma. And so to me, it starts there. And I think that as difficult as Denmark made it for England, especially I thought midway through the first half, or a lot of the first half, I think Italy had the capacity to make it even more difficult, to really frustrate England. And of course, they have an attacking threat as well, and it can come from multiple different sources on different days, you know, and we don't really know who will provide that most potent attacking threat come the game. It's been quite balanced, I think. It's sort of gone from one player to another from game to game. So whether it is Chiesa, you know, whether it's somebody like Insigne, who we know is a stylish footballer and can be the impetus for so much, that can change from game to game. I'm disappointed, that, of course, we all are, that Spinazzola saw his tournament end early, because along with Chiellini, he would be the other one I would pick as the standout for me. You know, you name your player. Insigne, you could look at Immobile, who I know can be up and down, but I think can be devastating when he's really on his game. And I just have a feeling that, and we can get to predictions later, I'm sure we will, but I have a feeling that Italy are maybe England's worst nightmare in terms of a team to play in this game, because England will have to come at Italy. Italy will make sure of that. But there still is that threat that Italy have when they go forward. So picking the lock of the Italian defence will be England's biggest challenge, and we'll see if they're up to it.
You know, it's interesting. You obviously, Chiellini has been superb, and you mentioned Bonucci, but coming into this tournament, one of the big question marks around us Italian fans was how is that pairing going to do, because they didn't have the greatest season with Juventus this past season. They had some injuries they dealt with. So, you know, typically you think Italians, you think defensively, and that our defense is going to be strong, but that was certainly one of the big question marks coming into it. But those guys have stepped up, along with Spinazzola and Di Lorenzo in defense, and Donnarumma has been tremendous in goal as well when he's been tested. So it's been a nice surprise from our defensive unit. Obviously, one of the big storylines heading into the final is that this game is being played in London at Wembley Stadium. Do you view this as a home field advantage for England, or do you think that it's going to put some extra sort of pressure on them that it almost could work as a negative for England?
It could be both. I think on the one hand, it is a home advantage. It has been a home advantage for England throughout this tournament in a way that I can say this as a Scot, so I'm not English, I'm not Italian. I hopefully could try and view this down the middle in a way that's slightly unfair, you know, on everybody else, because I do think that, yes, you have a host nation in most tournaments, but think about the other part of that. Every other country also gets to base itself in that country for the duration of the tournament. So this has been a home advantage and then some for England, because they've been playing at home, yes, except one match that they played in Rome. But save for that game, they've been at home. Everybody else has been traveling, and in some cases, very difficult travel. Now, Italy haven't had the difficult travel compared to, say, you know, if you look at Switzerland. I mean, it was appalling what they were asked to do. And, you know, they handled it. Denmark, too, you know, if you think about it, coming all the way back from Baku to then play at Wembley against England, who've been at home, you know, sporting integrity should come into it. But, yes, to answer your question, it is a home advantage for England. But, of course, the weight of expectation is now on England. And one thing I know about English people, because I'm a Scot, as I said, and I grew up in an environment where we were, you know, shown English media in Scotland all the time. So I know what their emotions are like. They will be very nervous. The English public will be very nervous going into this game. They're excited, of course, and they're hoping that they're going to win a major tournament for the first time since 1966. But nerves will be at play as well. And I think that if you were to, as I said this earlier, if you were to pick your worst nightmare for an opponent in a game like this as an English person, I think you would pick Italy, because Italians are winners. Now, I know that we can look at recent times and say, yeah, didn't qualify for the World Cup, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a good generation, or we didn't think it was until the last few weeks. But Italy have a way about them. And they will not be bothered by the atmosphere at Wembley. There will be Italians there, too. I lived in London. Yeah, I mean, I lived in London long enough to know that, you know, there's a big Italian population in London, and they will get their hands on tickets, you know, the UK-based Italians, and they will come from far and wide across the UK. And as I said, I just don't see somebody like Giorgio Chiellini or Leonardo Bonucci thinking to himself, oh, my goodness, we're playing at Wembley here with all these English fans. How on earth are we going to cope? No, I think they will be fine. And there is the chance, if things go badly, let's say Italy score the first goal, then things are going to get extra nervy for England at Wembley. So, I mean, it could work for them. It might go against them. On balance, it's been a lot better for them during this tournament. Would they be in the final without the home advantage? I'm not sure. You know, I will never know the answer to that question. Right. But I think it certainly is something that on balance has been beneficial to England throughout the tournament.
Yeah, it's definitely like a double-edged sword. Like you said, if they fall behind 1-0, the crowd starts to get tense and nervous, that maybe the players start to feel that. But on the other hand, if they get out to a 1-0 lead, the crowd is going to be loud and supporting them, and that could kind of work to their advantage. So it kind of all comes down to how England play.
Yeah.
All right, so who are you going to pick to win the final on Sunday, Italy or England? Feel no pressure to pick Italy just because this is a Calcio podcast. Who do you honestly see coming out victorious?
Well, the one thing that I've said, actually talking to my wife the last few days since I stopped broadcasting, since my duties ended, she's always asking me, you know, who do you think is going to win today? And I have said extra time last couple of nights, and we've had extra time, and I would not be surprised if it's extra time for this one as well. I wouldn't be surprised if it's penalties. I think that that is a real possibility. Not just because I'm on your podcast, Raffaele, but I do actually think Italy. I think if I were to pick winners on a fair basis, assessing the two countries and what they're good at, I would think Italy have the slight edge. Again, you have the Wembley factor, as we've discussed. Mm-hmm. Will that work for England? Will that sway it a little bit? I'm not sure. I think there is something about this Italian team. As I said, I think that in a probably tighter game than we've seen in many cases, maybe with not many goals, I think Italy to win it either by means of penalties or perhaps after extra time. We shall see.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know why. In the Belgium game, I felt like it was going to be a dogfight, but Italy could win. In the Spain game, I knew that was going to be a dogfight, and I felt Italy could win. For some reason, this game, I don't know if it's just my fandom starting to take over. I don't see England being overly challenging for us. I think, like you said, we're kind of maybe one of the last teams England wanted to see. And for some reason, I don't see them putting as much fear in us as Belgium did and Spain did. I just don't see it. But again, maybe that's just me getting a little delusional. All right, so one of the bigger moments in this tournament, and not necessarily for the right reasons, was when Christian Eriksen, he obviously collapsed on the field in that opening group game for Denmark. Certainly for me, it was one of the more scary moments I've ever seen in terms of the world of sports. You were calling that game, and I feel like you did an outstanding job just kind of reporting what you were seeing and not speculating and kind of walking us through that moment, because it was a long period of time where, you know, the camera was rolling and you were on commentary and kind of talking us through that. What was going through your mind and how did you kind of like handle that situation? Because, again, I feel like you did a great job with it.
Well, thank you. It was my hardest day as a broadcaster, I have to say, and I don't think I'll likely ever have a more difficult day. And it's all a bit of a blur thinking back now. And I should maybe tell you, I've not watched it back. And a few people expressed surprise when I told them that. And I said, well, you know, I lived it. And maybe someday I'll go back and have a look at it. But for the days immediately after it, I wanted to try to put it out of my mind. And thankfully, Christian Eriksen is doing fine and has been invited to the final on Sunday. But what I remember is just establishing, first of all, that he was down in a slightly unusual position over on the right-hand side. And I remember just looking at the body language of the players and immediately coming to the conclusion, this is not your normal injury or stoppage. This is something serious. And of course, you know, you can't know what it is. You can't speculate about that, as you've said. So I went back to sort of basic broadcasting training, and I've been doing this now for, you know, 35 years professionally. And you go back to staying calm, finding the right words, concentrating fiercely, being empathetic, knowing that the audience is going through what you're going through. Not over talking, which is really important. You know, don't talk for the sake of talking. Don't be afraid of silence and letting the pictures tell the story. And that's sort of, you know, what I adopted during that period. And, you know, I won't pretend that it wasn't scary. You know, it was, I think, for all of us. And I happened to be in the position of being at the microphone at that particular time. As I said, I'm just so grateful that he is fine, and full credit to the medical staff who did their jobs, who were there to assist Christian Eriksen in his hour of need. Yeah, it's something that will stay with me for certain, even though, as I said, it's all a bit blurry in my mind. I couldn't tell you now really what I said at any particular time during that. I would, you know, if I were to watch it, and maybe someday I will, but not, you know, in the near future, I probably would be surprised by every sentence that I uttered, because most of the time with commentary, you sort of have a vague idea what you said, maybe not exactly, but you have a vague idea on a big goal, you know, what came into your mind and what you said. But that was so shocking. As I said, people have been very kind about you know, reacting to how we handled it. And that's all you can hope for as a broadcaster, is that you did the situation justice. But it was a very frightening time. And as I said, my most difficult day ever at the microphone.
No, you certainly, you and your partner certainly did a great job handling it when it happened. Derek, I can't thank you enough for joining me on this podcast and sharing your insight on the Euro final coming up. Can't wait to hear you calling Bundesliga games for ESPN. You do a great job with that. And I enjoy following you on Twitter. And I don't follow the Bundesliga as closely, but I feel like I know a decent amount because I follow you on Twitter. So thank you very much. Stay safe, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
Oh, thank you, Raffaele. Thank you for having me. And I'm sure everybody in your audience will be expressing the following: Forza Italia.
Yes. All right. Take care, Derek.
You too.
All right. So my second guest joining me on the podcast is going to be Claudio Russo, who does a great job covering Napoli for the website Calcio Napoli 24. He's very dialed in with what's happening at the club all the time. He's a great follow on Twitter for Napoli fans and just Calcio fans in general. We'll get him on to talk about all that's been happening in Naples lately with Gattuso, Spalletti, Insigne's contract situation and more. Be sure to check in the description of this podcast so you could give Claudio a follow on Twitter and see the great work he's doing, again, for Calcio Napoli 24. So let me welcome in my guest on the Calcio Corner podcast, Mr. Claudio Russo. How are you doing today, Claudio?
Hi, Raffaele. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
No problem. My pleasure. All right. So you do a great job covering Napoli, and there's a lot of things happening right now in Naples. So I really wanted to get you on to discuss some of this. The first thing I wanted to get your take on was, obviously, the club made the decision not to bring back Gennaro Gattuso. Did you feel that this was the best move for the club, or would you have liked to maybe seen Napoli continue on with him?
Well, Raffaele, I think that Napoli on Gattuso made the right choice, but not only on the results, but because Gattuso wasn't the first choice of Napoli in the past, in the 2019 after Ancelotti, because Gattuso was free at the time, and Napoli wanted him only for 6 months, only until the end of the season, because they wanted to change. They wanted Ivan Juric from Hellas Verona. Mm-hmm. And when everything stopped with the COVID, Napoli stopped their thought about changing Gattuso, and winning the Coppa Italia was a good point for Gennaro Gattuso. But between Gattuso and De Laurentiis, it wasn't a really love story, a really good love story, because Gattuso is not a first-class trainer. He will change in the future. Surely he will become a really good coach, but Napoli wanted him only for 6 months. They weren't prepared to do another season with Gattuso, but with COVID, everything changed, and Napoli went on the season with a chance to bring on the Champions League qualification, but between the two guys, weren't it wasn't a good talk. Gattuso, after some losses, talked about his resignation. Napoli doesn't like him. De Laurentiis wanted to silence him. He said to prevent him from saying I don't know how many things, but he silenced him just to not talk versus him. So Gattuso wanted to speak a lot about him in his contract and his partnership with De Laurentiis, but his results would not have saved him from sacking, because De Laurentiis wanted to change, and Spalletti was a name, a good name, to keep on this team that has the talent to bring in another championship qualification.
Right, and you mentioned Spalletti, so that's who ultimately they hired to replace him. I mean, as you said, they were linked to Ivan Juric. Vincenzo Italiano's name was linked to them at some points last season. Do you think Spalletti was the best decision that they could have made, and you see the guy that could get them back into the Champions League and, you know, perhaps ultimately compete for that Scudetto?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure Luciano Spalletti is the right man. He's the right man because he knows how to win. He knows how to play well at Roma, Zenit, St. Petersburg, at Inter. He knows how to deal with difficult situation, because Napoli has issues. They have a big quality. They have strong players. Maybe not the strongest from a mentality point of view, and they have the talent to bring another top four spot, because they got Koulibaly, Insigne, Mertens, Zielinski, Manolas. They are Champions League players.
The talent's definitely there.
Yeah, I don't know what happened versus Verona, because It was a really, really solid match to play, but Napoli, from a mental point of view, went down right. In an impossible view for all the fans. At the moment, fans maybe want to know what happened that night, than to know what will bring the market or the new season. Spalletti knows how to deal with these issues, and I think that De Laurentiis has chosen him also because they have the same character, the same mentality, the same head in a point of view. But I think that Spalletti, if the first games will pay off, there will be a lot of love between De Laurentiis and Spalletti. But yesterday I was at his press conference. He knows very well how to say everything. De Laurentiis was here to see him talking. I think that if there are results, Spalletti will be a good coach also for the fans. But if some games will not be good, I think that Spalletti and at Inter and Roma, we knew him, so to speak, not so friendly. Mm-hmm. With the press, I think that things could change very soon for him, mm-hmm. but I hope not.
Yeah, no, it ultimately comes down to results, right? If Spalletti's winning, all will be good down there in Naples. And with the media, if they're struggling, of course, we know Napoli is a really difficult place to deal with that media and the pressure that those fans put on. So you mentioned De Laurentiis a bit and how maybe he was difficult to work with Gattuso. And one thing I constantly hear in the Italian media and whatnot is that, you know, De Laurentiis is a difficult president to work for. I mean, from your point of view covering this club, do you think that's a fair perception of De Laurentiis? Is he a difficult president to work for as perhaps a coach or some of the players to deal with?
I think that SSC Napoli is SSC De Laurentiis because the last word on everything is on him. He wanted to see everything from games, from players, from market, from merchandising. Well, Napoli has chosen another view about his technical kit. Contract with Kappa is over, and he wants to bring not his name, but his style on the kit. He's chosen Giorgio Armani to bring some samples. He wants to do it in North Italy in a fabric with his son Edoardo, with Luigi, with Valentina. But at the moment, Napoli has zero technical kit from for the future. Di Maro, the three-season pre-season camp, they have zero things with train. I think that De Laurentiis is a difficult man to work with because with the media he wants to play, he wants to make catchy phrases. About me, De Laurentiis, one time I asked him, after he said some things, and he said "bello mio," and it wasn't the don't know what to expect about him. So in some aspects, De Laurentiis is a good guy, is a friendly right. guy. But I think that work with him is very difficult. Benitez, Mazzarri, Ancelotti, Sarri, after 3 years, they wanted to go, also because of results. Mm-hmm. But to have him on chat every day is not the best thing to do. Also, Giuntoli, the sporting director, isn't either in a very good situation with him. De Laurentiis calls him every day at 6 a.m., Giuntoli said some years ago. At the end of the season, Giuntoli could leave Napoli. Perhaps he has another two-year contract. I think that working with De Laurentiis is difficult. It's difficult because it's, I don't know, maybe he's crazy. He's crazy because he has a really lot of ideas, really, really a good number. He spoke with his PR staff every day. Also to say things that maybe just fantasy, but you know, you have to deal with the president, with the chairman, right, who is you. And for us in media, not really a good man to deal with it, because he also prefers to speak with journals rather than websites. Mm-hmm. But he reads Calcio 24. He said to us some days ago. But I don't know. When I have to deal with him, I don't know what to expect from him. So it's a good guy.
Yeah, he certainly sounds like he has some difficult qualities to work with and likes to be involved. But you know, the work he's done with Napoli, bringing them back from bankruptcy and getting them to this, you know, top level team again, it's, I guess from a fan's point of view, it's kind of hard to totally knock him because of the job he's done bringing Napoli back to Serie A and everything. One of the other hot topics these days in Naples is certainly the uncertainty of Lorenzo Insigne's future. He has just 1 year left on his contract. How do you see this situation playing out? Do you think this is just the media blowing this up? Will he sign a new contract, or do you think it's actually possible that he could leave this club that he loves so much?
Well, I think that between De Laurentiis and Insigne is a poker game. Because everyone has chipped then to see what is the move of the other part, because De Laurentiis wants to lower his Napoli's salaries. Right. Insigne wants a raise, wants to end his career in Naples, and I think that Insigne is seeing the Dries Mertens contract as an example, because Mertens signed a two-year contract with an option for the third at 4 million per year, and a bonus of 2 million when he signed. Napoli wants to make a five-year contract about 3.5 million per year with bonuses, but I think that Insigne is playing well at the Euros, so he wants a raise. Napoli maybe could play a part, for example, well, Insigne, take me some offers from abroad, because in Italy he will not move, take me some offer and we'll see. So I think that after Euros, they will talk in Di Mar- not in Di Marzio, but in Castel di Sangro, because he will do some vacancy, some of it. Then I think that in Castel di Sangro, De Laurentiis will spoke with him, Spalletti will spoke with him, will spoke with his agent, Vincenzo Pisacane. Really, I don't know perché, because after the Euros, I think that the clubs will be interested in Lorenzo Insigne, but I do not think that they will offer, 20, 25, 30 millions for him, because in a year his contract will expire. So I think that it's a matter of time, because Napoli and Insigne will do a step down from their thoughts about a new contract. Also because Insigne is 30 years old. I don't know how many clubs in terms of money will make a great offer for 30 years old. Also in in COVID times and the economic crisis.
Right.
So I think that they will talk. I expect him to stay in Naples. Napoli signing a new deal. I hope for him, for De Laurentiis, to make everything in, don't know, a month, 2 months, because if Lorenzo will play in front of his fans, maybe play not well, then Napoli fans will not be happy to see their captain play not good with the contract that in a year will expire.
Yeah, I mean, as a Napoli fan myself, I certainly hope that they could work this out and keep Insigne there. And he definitely has a lot of pressure on him. Being a local product, growing up a fan of Napoli, and being kind of the symbol of this club right now, it's certainly tough for him. It's a sticky situation. I just hope it all works out for the best. What kind of moves do you think Napoli could make during the summer mercato? I've heard De Laurentiis and the club say, you know, they have to sell some players. And as you said, they want to cut some salary costs before they could bring in players. I know Emerson Palmieri has been linked heavily to them. It seems like every summer Koulibaly is being talked about being sold. Do you think any of these moves will happen? What do you kind of expect from their summer mercato?
A really tough decision for Naples, because they wanted to cut the salaries. Okay. But they have to sell. But if there aren't offers from other clubs for Koulibaly, Fabian, maybe Zielinski and Lozano, because Napoli, De Laurentiis said, will sell for a reasonable offer every player they got in the squad, in the team, I do not see how to lower their salaries if someone doesn't leave. Because for Koulibaly, there wasn't a 60 million offer. He's wanted that millions. Also for Fabian, I don't know how to cut salaries. You have to cut, okay, with Maximovic, with Yusai, with Bakayoko, but you have to replace them.
Right.
If you replace them, you have to spend salaries that they got in Napoli, about 1 million per year, 2 million per year. And if Napoli will not sell Fabian, maybe for 40 million, to make an example, I don't know how to deal with economical problems. De Laurentiis stated a week ago, Napoli could not live with these salaries. Okay. But you have to deal with your will on the market. If you want 60 million, they will not pay him for Koulibaly, that also, like Insigne, is 30 years old. Fabian not played a good year, so I really don't know at the moment how to deal with the economical issues for Napoli, but they won left back. Emerson Palmieri is a guy who Spalletti loves so much. He coached him at Roma, but he has the typical contract that Napoli likes, because Emerson Palmieri salary is 4.6 million of euros at Chelsea. He's on expiring contract, but Napoli, he is not ready to pay 20 millions for having him. So Napoli wants to expect Chelsea lower their 20 million of euros, maybe in August, maybe in last days of August, and to make a deal like that for Bakayoko. If you remember, yeah. Napoli acquired Bakayoko on loan with a part of his salary paid by Chelsea. Emerson Palmieri has to renew his contract with Chelsea, then a deal could be possible. Napoli also has to make another acquisition in the midfield, because after the departure of Bakayoko, they got Fabian, Lobotka, and Demme. So I don't know how to say, how to see Elif Elmas or Piotr Zielinski in the midfield. Then they wanted also a new centre back because Maximovic's contract is expired. He's a guy who wants to return with the team, but I don't know how much De Laurentiis wants to make a new deal with him. They got Luperto from Crotone, but I don't know if it's a player that could make Napoli's team. So I think a left back for sure, because Fosi Ghulam is done. A midfielder, because they got three midfielders. They have to make another acquisition. Maybe a goalkeeper, if David Ospina, whose contract is expiring in 2022, will leave. And maybe in the forwards, if there are some offers for Andrea Petagna, who Napoli paid 18 million, maybe another player could bring in the squad. But a left back for sure. Midfielder for sure. Well, we have to wait for some sell from some selling players to make a new deal
for sure. So we'll see what they do. And yeah, you mentioned Palmieri's contract of 4.6 million. If they're not willing to pay Insigne that high or go up to 4 million, there's no way they're going to pay Palmieri that type of money. I'll get you out of here on this, Claudio. So Italy on Sunday will obviously play England in the final of Euro 2020. How are you feeling about that game as a local Italian?
Whoa, Raffaele, I expect this game a lot because Italy has played maybe the best football in all Euros. A style of football that Italians for in first wasn't expecting, because we know Italy. Catenaccio,
right.
Everything. Every player thinks about defend then attacking. So to see a style with this style with Mancini, I wasn't expecting this. So here in Italy, there are a lot of not pressure but expectation in the final. Mm-hmm. Obviously, yes. Italy has played well also against Spain, although they need to defend themselves versus the Spain midfield that played the ball very, very well. To play in England in front of 75,000 of people, that in the major part they will support England, I think that is a situation. It's an ideal situation for the players because in the last 2 years they have not played in front of fans, so it's sort of a new thing for Italy. England, we have see what the Southgate team has bring on the pitch. Maybe for Italy, it's better to play against a real striker like Harry Kane versus Chiellini and Bonucci than a false nine like Michele Gallo of Spain. I think that from a physical point of view, England is has an advantage because they are playing how we imagine England could play with Sterling, with Bukayo Saka, maybe Sancho, and then midfielder with Declan Rice and Phillips. I think Italia really got the chance to win because, England plays well, is ready, they play in front of their fans. I don't care about the referees thing, the Superliga issue, Boris Johnson, Seferin, things like this. But don't know, maybe 50-50 in this game is a good point of start. But I hope that Immobile could play better than the skates than that Federico Chiesa and Lorenzo Insigne could make their right place on the left and on the right side. And I hope they will play also for Leonardo Spinazzola, who got injured in the Euros, and he was playing very well. I for sure know that if Italy will win here in Naples, everyone will go crazy. So if this happened, I hope to make some videos for everyone to see what will happen.
That would be great to see, yeah, if Italy win, to see that reaction and throughout all of Italy and particularly in Naples where you are. I can't thank you enough, Claudio, for taking the time to come on my podcast and talk about all these things related to Napoli. Stay safe, and I'd definitely love to talk to you again soon in the future.
Thank you, Raffaele, for the invitation, for having me. And I make an excuse for my English, but I...
No, you did great.
I hope we'll improve in the next time.
You did great. Thank you very much. I just wanted to thank all of you for listening, guys, and subscribing to my podcast. It truly does mean a lot to me that you care to listen to what I have to say about the world of calcio and whatnot. Sometimes I even wonder if I'm doing a good job with this podcast, but then I check the stats and the number of listeners for each episode and the engagement in terms of how long you guys are listening. And it's been amazing to see those number of listeners constantly increase each episode. And for the most part, everyone's listening through the end of the podcast and staying very engaged. So that really does mean a lot. Because you guys listen and help this podcast grow, I'm able to get great guests on, and hopefully they add value to my podcast from your standpoint, getting their perspective and hearing these other experts in their field kind of share their thoughts on what's happening. And I know I certainly enjoy getting them on and getting their perspective and getting to talk with them. I've had some great guests on, like obviously Derek Ray. This is his second time appearing on my podcast. Claudio Russo did a great job on this episode. I've had guys like Gab Marcotti, Julian Lorenz, Joe Tacopino, who in the past has owned some Italian clubs, and I can confirm I'm set to schedule have him come on my podcast again in the near future to talk about things that he was set to buy Catania and that deal collapsed. So I'm going to get him on hopefully soon again to kind of discuss all of this. And there's just so many great guests I've had on, and I know I'm leaving out some great ones, and I don't mean to do that to be disrespectful to them, but there's just too many to name. I'll continue to work hard with this podcast and with trying to get more great guests on, but I just really wanted to take this moment to say a big thank you to all of you that have listened, subscribed, and supported my work with this podcast and continue to do so. It definitely means a lot. So grazie mille. That'll do it for the 53rd episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. A special thank you to Derek Ray and Claudio Russo for joining me on this episode. Once again, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That'd be greatly appreciated to help us grow our content. Be sure to spread the word of this podcast to any friends or family members that you think would enjoy listening to a calcio-centric podcast. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.